The Iowa State Penitentiary in Fort Madison houses nearly 1,000 of the state's most violent offenders. What's it like to live your life behind bars? This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Today, the second of our special two-part program featuring conversations I had on a recent trip to the Iowa State Penitentiary in Fort Madison, which dates back to 1839. A new prison is under construction. This hour, my conversations with two inmates serving life sentences. Also, a conversation with the director of the Iowa Department of Corrections, John Baldwin. Life inside the fort, after this news. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Recently, I visited the Iowa State Penitentiary in Fort Madison. It's a facility that dates back to 1839. At the time, there were only 26 stars on the U.S. flag. Also, Iowa was not even a state, just a territory. This makes the State Penitentiary in Fort Madison the oldest prison west of the Mississippi River that's still in use. A new prison is under construction, just a few miles away in Fort Madison, and 2014 is the current estimate on when that will open. Our goal this hour, to describe life inside this very old prison, and how that may change in the new facility. About two-thirds of the 980 or so offenders here at the penitentiary are serving life sentences. They're lifers, most of them convicted murderers. This second hour of our two-part program, my conversations with two men convicted of murder and sentenced to life. Then, toward the end of the hour, John Baldwin, director of the Iowa Department of Corrections, will update us on the move to the new prison. But first, Lacey Kelly has been serving a life sentence for a murder conviction. He's been behind bars for over 40 years. I sat down alongside him on the bed in his 6-by-9-foot cell. We had a talk about the time he served and the impending move to the new prison, where many of the inmates will have to share a cell for the first time.
It's really a home away from home, basically, and it's been a journey for me.
I see you keep a very, very neat and clean house here.
It helps.
That's important to you.
Yes, it is. That's why a cellmate won't come in here. But I know eventually that they're supposed to go to double cells, but I'm not going to have cellmate.
Right, and that's one of the reasons that we're doing this is so that we can find out what life is like for you all here at this time, and sort of the expectations or maybe the concerns that you have about the new facility. What are those concerns that you would have?
Well, my first concern, basically, right off, was the double cells, living with another individual. I got 42 years in. And I've been by myself, and I'm not ready to do that with nobody else. Now, if you guys have already experienced this from going to other institutions and stuff, I haven't, you know. And I know what I can tolerate, and I'm doing good just dealing with myself, let alone somebody else in tight quarters like this. No, it won't work.
Oh, do you understand that the double bunking would be in a cell similar to this size?
Exactly the same size.
Exactly the same size. So we've got 6 foot wide by 8 or 9 feet long.
Yeah.
And maybe 8 foot tall.
Yeah.
Something
like
that.
And then they'll double bunk it.
And they'll double bunk it, and the man on the top bunk will be right up against the ceiling.
Right.
But, you know, there are budget cuts everywhere. The state says this has to happen.
Yeah.
They designed this new facility. You say you will not be in a double bunking situation?
No, what I hear, you know, policies changes by the weeks, right? Right now, as it is, they said kitchen and shop workers, they will double bunk. Because they want to have them all in one unit, and they'll go up, come out. But anybody who is doing life or more or a large number doesn't want double bunk, they'll get a single cell. They'd rather do it that way than have the trouble, you know, because I've seen the trouble they can have with that double bunk, and it's not worth it.
For instance, what kind of specific troubles?
I mean, you're forever having fights, you know, because people get irritable, you know what I mean? It gets hot. And in the places, other places I've been, and there's no air conditioning, and you're in there 24/7 with somebody, a roommate, don't take long.
Right.
At each other's throat, you know.
How much of the day do you spend here in your cell?
Not much. I come in around about 4 o'clock, 4:30, and then I'm in the rest of the day.
Mm-hmm. When you're in this cell here, you have your work, which is what?
I work down at the gym. I cook and sell all the sandwiches, pizzas, and ice cream. Yeah. That is my job. Mm-hmm. And I deliver.
So when the warden is describing the different tiers, mm-hmm. you are at a very high tier, so you have a relatively lot of freedom here.
Really, I don't. I'm in between. I'm in between the bad and the good. I don't need to be in the good because I have it all anyway.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, because the microwaves and the pizzas and all that because of my job. Mm-hmm. And I have all the movement like everybody else, so why go to the next level? I let that for somebody who doesn't have a job or that opportunity. So mm-hmm. I just kind of stay out of the way of things.
Mm-hmm. When you have new people come in, new men come mm-hmm. in here, who are not used to living in this right. sort of situation, what are the golden rules that if you would want to communicate to someone very quickly,
mm-hmm.
this is what
you
have to know and you'll get along the best you can here. What would you say to them?
Well, if you go old school, there was a lot of rules you could abide by real quick. Nowadays, you're messing with a younger generation. Their attitude is so much different than when I came in. I mean, it's just, we call them crack babies because their common sense is not there. So when you know, it's like, I'll give you a good example. If a guy was mopping the floor out there, don't go out on that floor until it's dry. Nowadays, the kids don't even pay no mind. They walk on regardless. It's just little things like that. Going into chow hall, everybody has their own little area where they sit at and stuff. That's a territory you don't mess with. You find a place to be at and be there, and then you just don't cross that line.
Mm-hmm.
But the biggest problem we have in here now, and it's probably everywhere, is respect. The guys don't have respect for themselves, and they're not going to respect you.
And that's the younger guys who are not
exactly
showing the respect.
Right, yeah.
So
yeah.
So in what ways do they not show what you think is the proper respect?
Well, they'll just like try to walk through you, you know, or turn their music up real loud, talk real late at night when you know there's workers around and you get up. They don't care. And that's upstairs, that's the unit where most of them are at
mm-hmm.
there in 219. And it's a handful, you know. And the warden and the administration have tried to put the workers down, the idlers upstairs to keep.
What's an idler?
He has no job.
I see.
Yeah, and then all he gets to come out for an hour and a half, and that's it. The rest of the time is in his cell. So they've tried to split that up because they see the problem. They see it coming.
I hear what you say. It's just like on the outside, if someone with no work can stay up late at night because they know they can snooze away the day.
Yeah, partying at night and got, you know what I'm saying, the boom box going.
Okay,
yeah,
I got you.
That happens here. And the dudes, we're not able to deal with the situations like we used to, right? We could go down to the cell and tell the dude, hey, you turn it down or else you can get your head busted. Can't do that no more.
Mm.
This is a new era, you know.
So what ways do you have to change that behavior that is a bother?
We really don't. We can't really act on it. It happens. Don't get me wrong. It happens.
Yeah.
But most of the time, the officer will come and tell them, hey, you got to turn that down. They'll turn their power off or whatever, you know, but basically, all you can do is just ask them to do the right thing, you know. But that's a job. That's a job within itself. Really, it is.
You've been here over 40 years, and mm-hmm. so you've seen a lot of changes. You talk about old school.
Yeah.
How is that different than what we're experiencing? And of course, we're seeing it as visitors.
Yeah.
We can't fool ourselves into thinking that we're experiencing the everyday part of this, but. How was old school different than what we're seeing today?
Okay, well, for one, I've had, like, the CERT team ask me the other day, one of the CERT team members, Manny, he asked me, he says, how would you like to have it, the way it used to be, Lacey, or the way it is now? That's a little bit of both. The technology, the electronics like we have now, when I came in, you didn't have no TV. You didn't have no radios or clocks and all that, right? Now you got all that. It's like a playpen now.
And you've seen much worse days.
When I come in, it was rough, you know.
What tell me about one of the worst days that you experienced when you came in. Would that have been in the 70s?
I came in January 1970.
So tell me about a bad day in the 1970s.
Well, first day I was out of orientation. Watched a football game, and when the game was over with, and I remember these two guys was arguing. And I heard you drop a melon. I heard that sound, and I happened to turn around, and this dude was standing up over this other dude, and it hit him in the head with a pipe, right, because he was going against the the opponents from the outside instead of the home team. And I said, whoa. You know, I'm thinking, that's an eye-opener there, right?
Right.
Yeah, the very first day. And I said, that was the way of the law. That was the law here, you know.
Right.
Compared to what it is now.
You know, there would be some people who would say, Lacey, you got it great. You got a TV, three meals a day, roof over your head, you're kept warm. This is maybe a little too much luxury.
Too much. Yeah, I know. That's what the public think, and they're partially right. And sometimes I kind of question that, right? The more you give, the more they want, right?
Yeah.
But the type of mentality the guys have here nowadays, they don't know when to say, I've had enough, right? But the problem is, with the guys you're dealing with now, if you don't give them TVs, you don't give them something to occupy their mind or burn that energy off, you wouldn't have this penitentiary. They'd tear it up. That's the type of mentality you're dealing with. Back in the day, when you had more level over people, we didn't have a lot of that, right? That's why we started getting some of these things. The warden let us have it. Des Moines said, okay, they're acting all right. Let's let them have a little bit, right? So if the public really understood the fact that it'd be better off to let them go ahead and buy out of their own money, buy those TVs and stuff, and then come out of their pocket paying for the damage that they're about to do, and they will do it in a heartbeat. I see it every day down on the basketball floor. They're burning off that energy, right? And if they didn't have that,
If you've just joined us, I'm Ben Kiefer, and I'm at the Iowa State Penitentiary in this special edition of River to River. At the moment, talking to Lacey Kelly in his cell. He's been in prison since 1970 for murder. Among inmates, talking about the crime that put you in prison is something of a taboo. So I asked Kelly how fellow inmates know about the crimes if they're not talked about.
They'll know by newspapers, and you got your jailhouse lawyers. They read all those articles in the paper. They know exactly who's coming in and who's going out and all that. We know beforehand. You also know the group they run with. Like, you have your pedophiles, they stay with themselves. Mm-hmm. Pedophiles know each other, you know, so it's real easy to figure that out.
Are there different groups with different status here? I mean, different groups? You say pedophiles stay together.
Yeah, they
why would they stay together?
Because they don't have no other home. They have no other place to be at. They respect each other. The other inmates that of other cases, they don't get no respect at all.
Uh-huh.
You know, that's the lowest of the lowest where we look at it. The old school, I should say.
Pedophiles.
The newer school, they just kind of blend in. They just don't care anymore.
There's not the different classes.
Yeah, they're just not there anymore.
What other groups are there besides that?
Well,
what names do you use, or what? How do you classify?
You really don't. It's more of a mixture of people now. Before, there used to be the way things used to be. Now, just everybody just kind of mingles and stuff. You know, you may have the blacks stay with the blacks and the whites stay with the whites and whatever. It isn't like that anymore. They just intermingle, which is a good thing in a way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that way you don't have that little segregation thing going on, right? Mm-hmm. And the gang thing, a lot of people they pump that up way more than what it really is. I mean, don't get me wrong, it's there, but it is nothing like
there
on the
is gang. There is gang activity in within these walls.
I'm sure, yeah. They you know, they may be part of whatever group, and they'll stay with their groups. But you probably wouldn't know it unless you really sit there and watch them, you know. But there is no rivalry, fights, and like you hear out on the street, nothing like that.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike the West Coast or East Coast or even a few miles from here, Chicago, they're serious there. They're serious about their stuff.
Not too long ago, we saw, I don't know if you watched the news, that some of the staff, some of the guards here were protesting
up front.
Because of the low staffing levels,
right.
the budget cutbacks. How do you see that? Do you see that with the cutbacks, the staffing cutbacks, that there's a danger not only for guards but for inmates here?
Okay, I understand the officer's complaint. The same way within here. We're starting to get that little feedback too. You don't have just one job. See, what they're doing is the next step to the next penitentiary, they only need so many officers. They're trying to get it down to that point. And I can understand their point of doing it. But the system here isn't set up like the new ones coming. The officer's under a little stress because they have to work three or four different jobs, right? Because they're not filling those jobs. I know of two or three different jobs all down where I work at. They need one more staff member. They can't have it because they're not going to have that many jobs or that job opening at the new penitentiary. So why hire somebody there that you're going to have to fire later? So that's what the administration is being dealt with. So whenever they're getting stressed, we get stressed too. We get activities snatched up out of the program, right? So both areas is right and wrong. You know what I mean? There's no happy ending to it.
So yeah. In your understanding of the new facility, mm-hmm. they can make do with fewer staff.
Oh, yeah, easy.
And have safety taken care of.
Yeah, because it's all electronics, basically. There'd be a lot of less guards they need because of the push button thing, which like the CCU's like that now, the mental health area, wherever it is, that's all controlled by buttons, and they don't need the staff, mm-hmm. you know. And the problem is the officers here are running into the fact, well, he got to do 3-4 different jobs when he only should be doing one. So if something happens, it gets to be a major situation for them, you know.
Very nice the way you have your cell done up mm-hmm. here. You got your pictures very clean and I might even say cozy,
if you
can say it. Is there anything though that you would wish different or wish that your next cell has when the new facility is open?
If tell you what, really, if I could, whatever cell I may go to next, if it could be just like this, have the good equipment, I'd be happy. Like, I got a good shooter over here that doesn't leak or anything or make noise, good lighting fixtures and all that. I'm rare to find these hooks here, all three of them. That's rare. I mean, and have the little paint job, because this is enamel. Most houses are not enamel, right?
Yeah, that's a nice...
Instead of latex, right? If I could have this in any one of the other cells, I'll go anywhere in this institution. It's just so rare to have all your equipment together.
Have the basics in working order.
Yeah.
That makes you happy.
That's a start. It makes life a lot comfortable, you know. It does. I mean, I know it may sound little to you, but it means a lot to us here.
When you're given a life sentence, when does that sink in? When do you realize coming into an institution like mm-hmm. this is where you're going to spend your life?
You know, with me, I don't know about most people, Some take longer. I remember when I just got out of orientation, I was on the bleachers. They had the bleachers out here, and you could look up over the hill. Now, I've watched some little trees and little twigs grow up to be trees, you know. You could see the house up there. And then policies was a lot different. At 15 years, you usually either get a time cut or you could go somewhere else, right? So I'm thinking 15 years, right? When you first start out, 15 years sounded like a long time. Don't get me wrong, it's still long, regardless of how you look at it.
Right.
That's when it sunk in. I said, whoa, why am I here? You know, right. I didn't even have to be here, you know? But
is it worth thinking about might have beens, what might have been had you made that bad decision?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's hit me over many a time, you know. But there's no sense of crying over spilled milk. You just move on and make the best of what you can, you know, and that's all you can. Or else, you know, I'm not weak to the point where I'm going to commit suicide, you know, and I've seen a lot of dudes would and have, you know, because they couldn't handle it. You know, even though you messed up, you're supposed to just pull strong and make the best of what you have and what you can do within the system that you have to face it with. But
have you had friends here who have committed suicide or thought about
suicide? I've had a couple, right? Yeah. And I was able to reach out. Matter of fact, I just seen a unit manager just a few minutes ago. He came and got me one day. Told me, he said, you got a friend that's on the edge. Go talk to him. And I went and talked to him, and everything now. He's doing good. But it happens, you know. Some people are just not as strong as others, you know.
Anybody, whether they're here or on the outside, has good days and bad days.
When you're down,
when you're down, what thoughts, how do you keep yourself going when you have a bad day?
My music right there.
What music you got there? Show me it too.
Oh,
show
there you
me.
Go, there you
let's
go.
See. May I take this?
Sure.
Let's see. I'm going to take this stack down and I'm going to put it in your lap here. This is a shelf above Lacey's bunk here, and so if you can just tell me about.
I listen to just about everything. And I got one right here is the U2s. And that's usually really a rock group that a lot of people, you know, it's in between rock and. And
you got some Barry White. You're a big Barry White fan, Mariah
big
Carey.
Time, yeah.
A lot of them at Mariah Carey.
Yeah. Best of love.
U2, you mentioned that
yeah.
too.
And I go here.
Yeah. Do you have a U2 song that you listen to that puts you in a great frame of mind?
All their music does.
All their music.
Yeah, because that's why I got them, because it doesn't matter which music or which song it is, it'll take me out there.
Yeah.
See, and that's like they have a MP3 players that are about to be issued here in about another month. Expensive. But when you get done, in my case, it'll probably be about $800 to get all my music downloaded on that. Hey, you can take that TV once I get that. You know, that'll
carry you through.
Yes, it will. Don't get me wrong. I love my TV and sports and all that, but music is the key thing. And if you can grasp on it, just one little thing, I don't care if it's bird watching. Hey, that's it. That's all you need. I'm serious. A lot of people don't look that way. I mean, your younger generation, they're trying to be all hip and sound hip and hang out with the fellas and talk slick. They don't go for it. Not with me, it don't. You know, it may impress other people, but don't impress me enough.
How much contact do you have, Lacey, with people on the outside? You've been in here for such a long time.
My whole family's dead. My intermediate family, my last sister just died last year. I have my wife. That's all the contact I have. And my aunt. I have an aunt.
You were married before you got here?
No. Who I got married to is my childhood sweetheart.
And so
she's been with me off and on over all these years, and we got married about 4 years ago.
4 years ago?
Yeah.
Well, belated congratulations.
Yeah,
to you.
Thank you. Yeah. But she finally, I say, we can just be pin pal. Oh, no. We're tying the knot.
And where does she live?
In Des Moines.
Uh-huh. Yeah. How did that wedding ceremony happen then 4 years ago with you?
What? In the visiting room.
Uh-huh.
We got a minister and all that. Got
a wall separating you, or was there a hug allowed?
Oh, yeah, we could hug and all that. We had a separate room over there, and I wasn't no congenial visitor. But, no, it was sweet, you know. And we're making it. You know, you have your little ups and downs, but, hey, that's the way of life, you know.
Lacey Kelly has been in prison since 1970 for murder. This hour, a recent visit I took to the Iowa State Penitentiary in Fort Madison to talk with the warden, the correctional officers, and with inmates like Lacey Kelly. There are some 980 of them serving time here. And when we come back, my conversation with another lifer here at the Fort, as it's known. Tony Sihavong of Des Moines was convicted of first-degree murder in 2002. He was just 20 years old. We'll talk about his 10 years in prison. Also, a conversation with the director of the Iowa Department of Corrections, John Baldwin. That's coming up after a short break. This is a special edition of River to River, recorded inside the Iowa State Penitentiary.
I hear the train a-coming, it's rolling around a bend, and I ain't seen the sunshine since I don't know when. I'm stuck in Folsom Prison, and time keeps dragging on. But that train keeps a-rolling on down to San Antone. When I was just a baby, my mama told me, son, always be a good boy, don't ever play with guns. But I shot a man in Reno just to watch him die. When I hear that whistle blowing, I hang my head and cry.
This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Now back to the final part of my recent visit to the Iowa State Penitentiary in Fort Madison, at a point in time when inmates and staff here ponder the move from this antiquated structure, which dates back to the 1830s, to a brand new facility under construction. In just a few minutes, John Baldwin, director of the Iowa Department of Corrections, will update us on the transition to the new prison. But first, about two-thirds of the 980 or so offenders here at the penitentiary are serving life sentences, lifers convicted of murder. One of those inmates is Tony Sihavong of Des Moines. In 2002, he was convicted of first-degree murder when he was 20 years old. He spent 10 years behind bars, 8 of them here at the Fort, as it's known. I visited him in his cell, a cell he'd just been moved to the day I visited. I began by asking how much of the day he spent in this 6 by 9 foot space.
Well, given my job, and you know, we have 2 hours, 4 hours of yard now, I'd say I just come in here to sleep and for counts. You know, so any given day, about 10 hours, 10, mm-hmm. 12 hours.
10 hours?
Yes, sir.
When you aren't sleeping, what do you like to do here?
Oh, I'm an avid card player. You know, I like to think that I'm the champion, but you know, there's a lot of people that would dispute that. There's something to pass time with, you know.
So you play cards. Are you allowed?
Being in the level system, we're allowed to be out there on the ranges and enjoy rec time out there. You know, and like I said, this is a new procedure that just started this week.
So your cell door is actually left open.
Yes.
And you can. Go out. I see a yes. card table actually with chess or backgammon on the top of it too. So you can go out and with the others in this cell house
that's
play
correct.
Cards or whatever.
Whatever, dominoes and everything that's available to us. Board games even. You know, a lot of guys actually like to play Monopoly, you know. So
which card game are you unbeatable at?
Pinochle.
Yeah. Pinochle.
Yes, sir.
When did you start playing that?
I learned how to play Pinochle 10 years ago when I was in county jail waiting my trial. You know, just, like I said, it's just something to pass time with. And mm-hmm. everybody said that was the hardest game to learn, but going to prison, that's the only game anybody plays. I was like, well, let's do it. You know, and 2 weeks later, there I come, just taking everybody down.
Describe that system. You said a level of advancement. How many different levels are there?
Just Monday, we reverted to a four-tier system. A tier one, which is level one, it's like orientation, you know, an on-call, whatever. You got to be there, I don't know, a certain amount of time, and then you go to tier two, which is idle. And then I believe you get idle pay, you know, a certain amount a month, and then you're job eligible. So as long as you're looking for a job, whatever, then you have that job and be in that level status. So long, report free, you'll be eligible. And we're over here right now, which is called Tier 3, the privilege level. We're out all day. You know, we have a washer, dryer. We're allowed to bring concession stuff back in from the gym. We have extra yards, you know, on the weekend, at night. And like you see now, you know, everybody's out running around.
Yeah, I was actually surprised, Tony, when you let us into your cell here. We walked down into the cell house. You unlock the padlock to your own cell by yourself.
Yes.
And this is not what I picture. So this is what it can be like if you don't abuse the privileges, right?
Correct. Yeah, like I said, there's some incentives in here that people look forward to, you know, and just like today. Last week I ordered a handheld game system, first time ever, you know, in the history of being in prison, and now I'm fitting to get one, so I'm real anxious about that, you know.
I imagine when you're first imprisoned, you said you had been in jail before this.
Yes, sir.
How do you get used to that idea that you will not be on the outside again? Maybe you have some hopes for an appeal, but help us understand how you cope with that.
Okay. We're not getting too egotistic, you know, whatever. How it helped me is, first and foremost, accepting the fact. You know, I'm still fighting my case. Don't get me wrong. Just because they say once you give up on life itself. And I haven't. I'm still in the court system fighting my case. But like I said, it's accepting what went on and looking at the worst of it. You know, but like I said, there's still a chance. So when I look at it, every day I wake up, I'm just blessed to wake up that day, you know, and just take life one day at a time.
Blessed, yeah. Even though you see yourself in prison.
Yes, a lot of people will look at it like, well, hey, you know, I got a roof over my head, 3 square meals a day, which is true and all, but we don't have bills to pay. But, you know, it could be a lot worse still. You know, mm-hmm. I could be buried somewhere or I could be homeless, you know what I mean? People make mistakes, you know, and I'm one of those guys.
How much contact do you have with people in this cell house? Do you have a circle of friends here, would you say, or a couple of contacts, or are you more of a person who keeps to himself?
I am not antisocial, but at the same time, I don't go out of my way to make friends. You know, it's, I'm one of those guys that's easy to talk to. I'm down to earth. You know, just if you have a question, I'm gonna answer it. You feel you want to do something, hang out, whatever. I'm there for it. You know, like I said, it's you are, or your time is what you make it. You know, and it's, if you choose to be miserable about it, then it's gonna be hard for you. You know, that's why I'm glad to have this level system. I'm glad to be in it because there's so many options of what to do, you know, and it doesn't even, half the time I don't even feel like I'm in prison. Like I said, it's a routine that I have. I go to work 5 days a week, you know, and then when I get off work, by that time, I just come in here and take a little quick nap, and then it's, by that time, it's yard time, you know, and then so.
Is that a highlight of the day, going outside?
For me, yes, because I work out a lot, you know, and being a little guy, I don't have a Napoleon syndrome, you know, but it was just working out is one of the things I can exceed at, aside from playing pinochle. You know,
right. Working out will relieve some stress and just make that, you feel better up in your head too, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. To me, it does. I mean, some people, you know, for different reasons, maybe a lot of guys, you know, might want to get in better shape or whatever. The physical thing doesn't affect me much. It's just the feeling of it, you know, being pumped up and just give me something to do too.
When you look at a Hollywood depiction of prison and being in prison, what doesn't ring true to you?
Key word, Hollywood. The only thing that I've seen rung true, you know, was maybe a fight or two. But all that old, we're ganging up on the guards and all that stuff don't happen, you know. If it did, we wouldn't have all the privileges we do now. Yes, I understand you have to earn everything, but I take pride in doing what I do and being where I'm at, you know. Since I've been here, I've been report free, been good, you know. I was a hard-headed kid out there on the street, you know.
You said you had a hard time on the street. Where'd you grow up, Tony?
I grew up in Des Moines. Mm-hmm. I was born in Chicago, you know, and we left one violent city to me, Des Moines is a town, you know, coming from the big city. And then seeing how that started to come up, you know, with all the drug movement and all that, so it turned into a bad city. It's a bad experience for me myself, especially being in my adolescent years. It was hard, you know, and I have no brothers, so I go out there on the street and you see, create a family. And I don't want to say the G word, you know, so a group of people that I didn't, now that I look back, it wasn't worth it. You know, but like that's what I meant earlier when I said I could be underground instead of being here where I am now, doing what I'm doing, you know, and actually taking pride in it, you know. Mm-hmm. So,
what sort of contact do you have with people outside the prison? Who do you correspond with?
I correspond. You know, I call my parents every weekend, my sister every once in a while, and we have this thing set up called Old Mail. It's like for us, it's old mail, offender mail, but to them, it's email, and we can do the same thing, set up an account. Or a lot of people do that internet, writeaprisoner.com, stuff like that, you know. I've tried it before, I'm not going to lie, you know, but that's just for correspondence. So.
When you write to your family, your parents, what are you most interested in finding out about their lives or what's going on? Is it Des Moines where they live?
Yes, sir. My family are hunters and fishers, you know, coming from overseas in Asia, all they do is hunt and fish. So when I call them, hey, catch a big one today, you know, that's how we always started off. Try to keep everything away from here. Whatever happens in here, to me, I keep it to myself, you know, because I know everybody have their own problems, and I don't want you to burden you guys with mine.
So your parents don't ask you about your daily life here, what's going on here, or that's just...
They just ask. They don't ask the essential, though. How many soups you have left, or, you know, you need any money, or something. I mean, okay. No. Sometimes I ask for it when I really want something, but if it's something that I can do without, I will.
What's the talk among your fellow inmates about this move to the new prison? What are the main areas of concern that people have when you think about moving?
The people that I mostly talk to, the only thing we talk about is jobs, you know. And I used to be a mentor out here in the clinical care unit, and I quit that job because they won't have a clinical care unit, you know, in the new prison. So I kind of planned ahead and like, well, it's a career move because if I change jobs, I have to work my way up in pay scale, you know, so I got to start at the bottom.
You want to make sure that that job or that career path exists in the new prison.
Correct, correct. Mm-hmm. And that's our main concern, you know, with me and a couple of guys that I talk to mainly, that I work out with, I should say.
And so you mentioned you're still fighting your case.
Yes, sir.
Even though you have a life sentence,
yes.
you hope one day to get out.
Yes.
What would you want to do first of all? What would your first afternoon be spent doing?
I would my family. There's nothing more important than family. I would spend time with them, whatever they want to do. Even if I didn't like it before, I'm gonna make myself like it now. You know.
Yeah.
You want to hold your family dear, man. You know, I've watched a lot of shows. I've had a lot of conversations with people about how something's going on inside the family, and I'm like, hey, man, you gotta fight through it. You know, man, if you don't have family, who do you have? You know, and some people catch on to what I'm trying to say, but some people are just too hard-headed, I guess. And I would want to say I was one of those hard-headed guys growing up. That's why I think I'm in this position now.
Tony Sihavong of Des Moines in his cell at the Iowa State Penitentiary. Tony is serving a life sentence for murder. He's now 30 years old. He spent 10 years behind bars, 8 of them here at the fort. This is a special two-part edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. This was recorded recently on a visit I made to the Iowa State Penitentiary. And you can listen to both parts of this Inside the Fort special or any of our shows anytime at our website, iowapublicradio.org. Make sure to leave us a comment and let us know what you think. And a comment before we continue. We know that some who are listening are the victims of violent crime, family members who suffer every day, years, decades after they themselves were violated or lost a loved one to homicide. Our point in doing these two programs from inside the penitentiary is not to take away from that pain in any way, the pain that survivors of violent crimes feel. The task we set for ourselves was simply to describe the life inside this very old prison, and how that may change in the new facility. Finally today, a conversation I had recently with the director of the Iowa Department of Corrections, John Baldwin. Within the next couple of years, inmates and staff will move from the antiquated Iowa State Penitentiary, which dates back to the 1830s, to a brand new facility, also in Fort Madison, now under construction. So I began by asking Director Baldwin to remind us why the change to the new facility is needed.
It is probably the only building in Iowa where you can stand in one location and virtually touch three centuries of Iowa architecture. And it is time for a change. We need to build a modern, safe, staff-efficient prison that offenders can have better success in.
Mm-hmm.
And by that, I mean the old prisons built in the Albany style, which is what ISP was built in, were mainly for the punishment of offenders. And now we are focused more on the treatment side, the safety side of staff and offenders, and clearly there is a punishment side of our business. We are what we are.
Mm-hmm.
But we also try to make sure that we give the offenders a chance to work their way down to lower levels of security. And we want to make sure that staff have a safe environment and staff have appropriate tools, appropriate space to provide supervision to the offender.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if you can give us a visual. You've seen models of this, the new facility, and we were out mm-hmm. to see it being built from a distance. But we all have in our mind the sort of typical cell house view, Hollywood cell house view.
Sure.
And that certainly can be found, the visual of that can be found in the old Iowa State Penitentiary. So contrast that with what the vision will be when this new facility opens.
Sure. The old ISP, as you correctly say, is your stereotypical prison. Instead of the four or five tier ranges that are there at Fort Madison, it's going to be a two-level system. Probably the biggest change is we're going from 13 acres inside the walls at Fort Madison to 45 acres inside the fences at our new ISP. The actual prison is going to have four different housing units spread apart, and then there's going to be two units that have single cells, and then there's going to be a double-celled unit. And the double-celled unit is new as far as Iowa DOC is concerned, although nationally it's fairly common.
As a matter of fact, one of the chief concerns the offenders pointed out to us at Fort Madison was the issue of double bunking in the new facility. Mm-hmm. These are Iowa's most violent offenders. Many have served decades behind bars, guilty of homicide, in single cells, exclusively up to this point. What do you think of the offenders' concerns that they should not be put into to double cells, that they should remain in single cells also for their own safety?
Well, one, there are going to be single cells, and they are not going away. There are people who need to stay in single cells. There are also people who can contribute mentally to the offender population, and they have a lot of skills. And as they move on to medium security and then to minimum, they're going to have to learn to live in something other than a single cell.
Mm-hmm.
So this is almost like training for your movement out of maximum security and into medium and minimum.
The Iowa State Penitentiary executive staff has long said that its plan for the new facility will require more than 600 staff for the 800-bed facility
mm-hmm.
That you're describing. Yet I understand the staff currently is down to 418.
Yes, that is correct.
Connect the dots from where we are now to where we will be eventually sure. in the new facility and where the staff is going to come from, where the funding for that additional nearly 200 staff will be coming from.
Right. When we talked about this years ago, we said that if we kept the staffing levels that we had back when we started this, we could maintain that level of staffing, and it was 575, I believe, was what we settled on, and expand by 250 the number of offenders that we supervised. And that statement is still true. We can supervise 250 more staff with the same number we had back in 2007. That's important that we maintain that. Now, we have dropped, of course, since the 2006-2007 year, but we've always held that as our goal, trying to do more work with offenders with the same number of staff.
So what are you hearing from the legislature, from state lawmakers, from the people who will have the resources to get you up to the staff levels that you say you require?
Mm-hmm.
Will you be there?
I think so. No one has promised anything yet, of course. We are going to be submitting our budget this summer for FY14 and FY15, and we expect to be asking for that number of staff that will allow us to keep our promise that we could run ISP with the same number of staff we had when the escape occurred and have 250 more offenders under supervision.
Director Baldwin, in touring the Iowa State Penitentiary, you're struck by some of the oldest parts being just such magnificent architecture, beautiful, albeit imposing architecture. Do you know what the plans are for the old buildings?
We have several ideas. One, we would hope that the city or county where ISP is located, and it's obviously Fort Madison and Lee County, would consider taking it over and operating it as maybe a museum or some type of thing like that. I mean, you were right. I mean, the ISP is just a glorious old prison, and the architecture is really stunning. If that doesn't happen, we will maintain it to a very low level. We're going to be moving out of it. It just cannot be used as a prison again. It has served its time, and it's time to be replaced.
What about making it into a bed and breakfast?
I actually like Baldwin's bed and breakfast. I mean, honestly, I use that line a couple times this session. And when they don't like Baldwin's bed and breakfast, I've tried, how about Mall Behind the Wall? And neither one catches on, by the way.
Well, keep on trying. Maybe okay. Something will catch on.
Yeah.
John Baldwin, thanks.
All right. Thank you very much.
John Baldwin is director of the Iowa Department of Corrections. And that winds up this special two-part edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News, the result of a recent visit we made to the state penitentiary in Fort Madison. You can listen to both hours of this Inside the Fort special or any of our shows anytime at our website, iowapublicradio.org. You can also see a number of photos we took during our visit to the penitentiary at iowapublicradio.org or an entire photo album on Iowa Public Radio's Facebook page. Make sure to leave us a comment. Let us know what you think. This special edition was produced by Alex Hoyer. John Pemble captured all the interviews and sounds from the penitentiary. Production assistance from Dennis Reese and Allison Sullivan. The executive producer of Iowa Public Radio's talk shows is Jeff Schmidt. Our theme music is written and performed by the River Monks. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.